what might just be going on with you there and how the hell are you making it. Thanks for tuning in to Crash Bang Boom Podcast. Today's guest is Chris Hawthorne of Hawthorne Drum Shop in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Similar to the manufacturer discussions I've had previously, I wanted to reach out and hear more about vintage gear and any crazy stories with refurbishing older kits, as well as any crazy stories associated with said kits. So that brings me to talking to drum shops, which I'd like to do more of going forward. And that, of course, is where Chris from Hawthorne Drum Shop comes in. He and I were able to touch on what got him into selling drums, some of the more rare and beautiful drums, as well as his personal favorite era, and some of the cool Japanese kits that he's collected. So I hope y'all dig it. Shout out to my sponsor, New Orleans Record Press. If you're looking to release vinyl for your project, go on over to neworleansrecordpress.com for all your mastering, lacquer cutting, lacquer plating, design, more mastering, packaging, and more options. They print both 12 and 7-inch records in 120 and 180 gram variants, and they do smaller runs and larger runs up into the thousands. They could even turn around smaller runs quicker than most in the industry. So reach out to them if you're looking to do any and all of that stuff. Hit them up, and that's neworleansrecordpress.com. In an attempt to help out the musician community that's struggling right now, keep your eyes peeled for artists offering lessons, masterclasses, tutorials, and live streams, and more during this downtime from touring. Bandcamp and merch purchases can also provide some help during these tough times. And if you find yourself in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and want to see some drums, make sure to hit up Chris over at Hawthorne Drum Shop. You can also see some of the drums online via his Instagram at Hawthorne Drum Shop, and or checking out his reverb shop. So here we go, Chris Hawthorne. Hawthorne Drum Shop it is. Crash, bang, boom.
Crowds go mad with joy.
All right, Chris Hawthorne of Hawthorne Drum Shop out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. What's going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Just made a recent move. We, after 15 years, left New York, and now I'm out in Salt Lake City, Utah. So it's a just completely different world. Rather than buildings and this and that and the other, it's more about being surrounded by mountains, which is cool. But it's also cold as hell here. And within about, about 5 days of being here, I slipped on some steps from a little bit of snow and cracked my elbow open and had to get my elbow stitched shut, which was a complete pain in the ass. But other than that, it's been cool.
Is it colder out there than it is in New York?
It's a little different. It's a little more desertous out here. But what you do definitely get is just some of that wind and just cold air and everything coming down through the mountains, down into the valley that is Salt Lake City. And then not that far off, you have the Great Salt Lake there as well. So if you go out towards that way, then I suppose then you have that cold ass, you know, wind ripping off of a lake as well. So it's pretty damn chilly as far as I can tell, man.
No, I've been to New York, like, not a lot, but it seems like every time I went, it was always like the winter.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I mean, it's cold in Pittsburgh, but it was just like always, I think it's the wind.
Oh, yeah.
It's like so bitter cold.
Totally. So, yeah, just in looking at how obviously all this COVID madness has affected businesses and whatnot, did Hawthorne Drum Shop have to shut its doors at any point, or have y'all managed to at least stay open with minimal people coming through, or how's that been working out for y'all?
So my model's been, like, different. I've operated under, like, an appointment-type kind of model thing
over the last
few years.
Yeah.
You know, it's only really been me. I hired, like, a part-time employee this summer who comes in, like, you know, 15, 20 hours a week and helps me clean the parts and kits and all that stuff and just, like, do general stuff. But for the most part, it's, like, it's been me since I started. Yeah, I mean, I started at my house. And then, like, I moved to, like, a warehouse space, and then I had an issue with the landlord, like, immediately after I moved in there, so I had to move to another warehouse space. So it's kind of like I've been building, you know, kind of like growing and building up inventory. And I actually just moved again, except I moved to, like, a retail spot. So
okay.
I think it was, like, a month and a half ago, 2 months, I moved to a spot above a guitar store called Hollywood. Here in Pittsburgh.
Cool.
They had they have like a spot on their second floor, and there's been drum shops in and out of here, I think, probably for the last like 15 or 20 years.
Wow.
But, you know, it kind of sucks with COVID because at this point I was planning on like being open with like hours and more traditional style drum shop. But, you know, just here in Pittsburgh it's pretty bad, and it just kind of feels not like a great time to do that. So
right.
I'm kind of just waiting for stuff to kind of calm down a little bit.
Yeah. As I was mentioning before I hit the record button, it's wild again that I wasn't really aware of what you were doing. And I guess, once again, because my wife is from Pittsburgh, her last name is Hawthorne, and I'm a drummer, obviously, and I love drum shops, but somehow I just wasn't aware what you had going on. So I guess with the warehouse that you were in prior to moving to the retail one, how long were you in the one or two warehouses there? How long was that time?
Well, so I always like my friends and everything. Like, it seems like every time I see them, they're like, "Oh, I heard you're moving again." You know, I think it's been like three or four times in 2 years, and it's not like an intentional thing. Mm-hmm. But I think I was at the first one, so I mean that was kind of funny. I found this warehouse spot. It was like super cheap. You know, obviously it wasn't like the nicest thing, mm-hmm. but it was like an old hospital.
Wow.
They had torn out like a lot of the walls. And so, yeah, it was kind of creepy, but it was a lot of space for cheap. And so, like, I had this long conversation with the landlord. And then I move in, you know, get stuff set up and start working. And then he emails me. He's like, "Hey, man, like, you got to stop, like, making noise with your drums."
Oh, come on. What the fuck did he think it was?
Well, exactly. You know, and I'm like, "Hey, man, like, we definitely talked about this for, like, a good hour before I moved in, because, like, you know, you're concerned, you know, you're making a whole bunch of drums and there's other tenants in the building." But I think I started to look for a new spot after 4 months.
Oh, God.
And it took me a while to find another one. And then I found a cool one that was actually, like, right down the street. And I was there for a year and a half. And it was great, like, great landlord, like, cool-looking spot, like, industrial-type thing, kind of like Pittsburgh is.
Uh-huh.
And then, unfortunately, the drum shop that was in here before me, they had to close up because of the pandemic, and this spot opened up. And, you know, it was kind of one of those things where it was like the right situation. So
right,
moved everything again and moved in here. So
wow. Well, congrats on getting into a retail space, man. Is it a, having not seen it, is it a pretty tight space, or do you got it? Because, I mean, you have a good bit of kits and snares and everything else from what I can see.
No, I mean, I think it's bigger than my other one. The thing about the other spot I was in, it was like I had like my workshop area and then like the quote-unquote showroom area in the same like room.
Uh-huh.
So stuff would kind of spill over, and it frankly was really messy.
Yeah, bet.
But this I have, like, there's a partition, like a big wall, and then my workshop's on the one side, and then I have the showroom on the other side. And I think it turned out really nice. It's, like, it's not as, I don't know, like, cool. I don't know if you want to use that word as the other spot. Like, I got carpet, and, like, there's ceiling tiles and whatnot. But I think it turned out cool.
Nice. Well, yeah, congrats on that, man. Have you always been into vintage drums, and then that's ultimately what led to you kind of, you know, amassing all of these and then getting to the point where you could actually start turning some of these around and selling them and doing everything else with them?
I mean, to be honest, no. I kind of have like a weird history with like music and drums in particular. I think I started playing when I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I started playing drums was like a buddy of mine got a guitar and then had a couple other people play guitars. And I frankly knew nothing about music. Like,
yeah.
I remember at one point I like learned like what a chord was and that like music was made of chord progressions. It sounds like ridiculous to not know that. But I knew nothing about music, and like I got a drum pad and took lessons. And then I played in bands for probably, I don't know, six to eight years or something like that.
Gotcha.
But I got my first kit, like my first real kit was a Tamastar Classic.
Uh-huh.
I remember walking in the shop, and it was like in the window. And I didn't know anything about drums. I'm like, "Well, that one looks cool." And so they ordered me the kit, and I played that for probably 6 years. And then I don't know why, for some reason I saw a video of somebody playing like a Vistalite kit on YouTube. I'm like, "That's kind of cool."
Uh-huh.
And I went down like this like rabbit hole of like these Vistalite kits, and then you get something in your head. And I just happened to like post on one of these like local gear trading groups on Facebook, say, "Hey, I got like this Tamastar Classic, you know, I'm looking for a Vistalite kit."
Mm-hmm.
You know, like not thinking that anybody would want to trade. And this guy hit me up. He's like, "Yeah, I got this black Vistalite kit, I'll trade you." So I went over to his house, and it was like immaculate.
Yeah.
Like 26, 13, 16, 18, super clean. I remember like sitting down behind it, and like I'm not a tall guy. I'm like 5'7",
yeah.
And the bass drum like felt like it was up to my neck. And like this is like kind of wild. And I guess like that's kind of where it started. I had that kid, and then I traded or sold that one, and it kind of just like I kept getting all this stuff because you're training up to the next kit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was never anything like intentional. It was just like a hobby. You know, then it kind of turned into something more than that.
Obviously, yeah, man. When you mentioned that Vistalite kit or Vistalite kits, plural, that you had, were any of those like pre-mid-70s? Because I actually have a clear one that's sometime pre-mid-70s because I know the 12-inch Tom has the smaller lugs than the 13 and the 16. And I know post-75, they actually increased that lug size to where all of them matched. So it's sometime pre-75. I know that much.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely like an earlier kit.
Yeah.
But it was a 13, and maybe later on they put small lugs on 13, but for the most part they'll take like a large lug.
Gotcha.
But you know, it had the pointy corners and you know, the skinny spurs and all that stuff.
Oh yeah.
And again, back to that, I didn't know anything about it. I'm like, "Oh, this is cool. It's acrylic, it's big. You know, it's got this like really what I thought was like a skinny bass drum because I was playing, you know, a kick drum that was like 20 inches deep."
Oh God.
So, yeah. You know, it's funny. Like I can't, you know, and you sound like you got your nose like up in the air. Like, "Oh, I don't play these long bass drums anymore."
Uh-huh.
You know, for me, that was kind of like a new world, I guess.
Sure.
And I think the next kit I got, I was like on Craigslist, and there was like this old like white rocker Ludwig kit.
Uh-huh.
And it was like super cheap. I'm like, "Well, I'll just buy it and clean it up." And like I bought it, cleaned it up. And I was playing at a local church at the time, and I brought it in there. I'm like, "This doesn't sound bad."
Yeah.
And, you know, it was kind of – then I traded that for like a big Tama kit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably the way that it starts for, you know, a lot of people.
Absolutely, man. Well, what are some of the more strange drums that have come through your doors? I can't remember if I saw if y'all had one of those Trixon freaky bass drum shaped kits that were around. Have y'all gotten any of those at any point?
Trixon, oh yeah, I'd never had one before.
Uh huh.
I mean, I guess you could say they're rare. Like, it's not like they come up all the time.
Yeah.
But you know, you see them at like trade shows and other shops have them, but I went on vacation this summer to the beach, and it was like the only time in the last like year that I've been like out of the state, other than like running like over to Ohio to like get drums and stuff because I'm like right on the border.
Right.
But you know, anytime I go somewhere, I'm always like, "Oh, I wonder if there's any like cool drum shops or like you look on Craigslist and all that stuff."
Uh-huh.
And I was like, the day before we were leaving, this like Trixon kit popped up in like the middle of PA.
Oh.
And I was down in Delaware. That's kind of cool. And like the more I thought about it, and like it was kind of wrecked, like it some cracks in the wrap and missing parts and all that stuff, because you know, kind of the way it, especially the hardware on these, not the most reliable.
Right.
But the more I thought about it, I'm like, "Man, I really want to like have that kit." So like we took the long way around home and stopped off at this guy's house and picked it up. And it actually had a second bass drum that I sold separately from the kit.
Oh,
but,
wow.
Yeah, it's a super cool kit. Like, I remember, like, I posted it on, like, my personal Instagram, and, like, all my, you know, friends and family that, like, don't know anything about drums are like, "That, like, seriously melt?"
Right. I mean, it's what it looks like.
Yeah, but, you know, but yeah, it's a really cool, it's a unique design. You know, I don't know how functional it is.
I was about to say, yeah, I mean, like, what if you even, like, pop a bass drum head? Is it not a nightmare to get another bass drum head for those kits?
Well, Rima makes.
Oh, they do? Okay.
They're super, yeah, they're super expensive.
They're
like $200 a pop.
Wow.
But Vox actually just reissued these.
Ah, okay.
The heads on this one actually are newer.
Gotcha.
Like, there's, you could tell, like, the Trixon logo was just a sticker and... So that kind of makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
But Yeah, that's probably one of the weirder ones I've had.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned Vox reissuing those, which I didn't know was a deal. And I didn't know that Vox was even making drums, if that was the case anymore. I mean, the last time I remember seeing Vox drums was probably in the James Brown band with his drummers playing Vox drums, and maybe a few of the drummers of that era. But I haven't seen Vox drums around hardly at all. Are they still making drums?
I don't think.
Yeah.
If my like memory serves, I feel like another company, and I don't know the name, I should, put out the kit under the Vox name.
Oh, got you. Okay.
I don't know. Like, I want to say Gibson, and it probably wasn't, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not like they're making this big comeback.
Right. Exactly. I hear you, man. What are some of the more rare drums that have come through? I mean, I've seen a couple, one or two or three, at least, like 20s era, like Ludwig snares and whatnot. So I'm sure you've had even more stuff come through. Is there some particularly rare stuff that's been really cool that you've gotten your hands on?
Probably the rarest kit I ever had was, I can't remember if it was probably late 50s. It was a Green Sparkle Gretsch.
Oh, wow.
It was 18... 12, 14.
Wow, a little jazz kit.
Yeah, and it was the 14 and the 12. I think they were all three ply, actually.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Which is, like, you know, really, especially in those sizes. But, like, it popped up on Craigslist or Facebook, like, real late at night as, like, a kid's kit. And I was, like, looking at it. I'm like, that's definitely, like, a Gretsch.
Uh-huh.
And I had to wait, like, a week and a half to meet the guy. And I was, like, kind of sweating. And then, like, he shows up, and they're just, like, Gretsch, you know, like bop kit, and these like really rare sizes.
Wow.
But the bass drum was like wrecked.
Oh.
I think I sent it to Jack Lawton, and I think he told me that he plugged like 51 holes in it.
Whoa.
Which is insane. Yeah. So like somebody at some point, what they did was they took the original green wrap off, and then they put Rogers hardware on it and put like newer green wrap. But at this point it was done in like the 70s because the newer green stuff they had put on was actually faded.
Right.
It's like you give a 3-year-old a drill.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it looked like. But he did a good job on it. He like filled all the holes and like used kind of a faded wrap. Took a while to get done, but that was probably the rarest.
Wow.
And then there was another kit that I think about all the time. It was a Thermogloss. It was a 70s Thermogloss kit, 26, 13, 16,
mm-hmm.
that was being sold by the daughter of a guy who was a drummer. Like the fella, I think he was in his 80s. He was super nice. He bought it off of somebody in the early or late 70s who had bought it for their kid. And their kid had played it like for a week.
Uh-huh.
And then just put it in cases. And he was in like a polka band or something. I can't,
yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I remember like showing up at his house and he took the kit out and I've never seen anything like it. Whoever ordered the kit was trying to like mimic what Bonham did. I think Bonham had like a Rogers mount on his, like a automatic mount.
Huh.
And they used the Ludwig standard mount on the side of the bass drum with like a standard Tom mount coming out of the side, which I've never seen. Like it kind of mimics a rail, but it's like way more reliable.
Uh-huh.
Which was cool, but the craziest part was there was a second bass drum.
Oh.
So we're looking at this and I'm like, man, this is so cool. He's like, well, there's another one. And he opens up the fiber case and it literally looked like it had never been played.
Wow.
Like the thermogloss was like not faded at all. Looked at it like it just left the factory. Original heads, like super clean.
Wow.
And there was a Supraphonic, too, there, and he opened up that case. I remember picking it up and, like, literally putting fingerprints on it.
Whoa.
You know, usually that'll happen, like, when you clean a drum, but, like, you know, this drum hadn't been touched.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was a really cool one.
Damn. Super cool, man. What's as far as one of the more beautiful kits that you've seen come through? I saw one in particular that was really cool. It was like a gold non-sparkle kind of gold gloss wrap over a Gretsch kit that almost looked. I mean, it almost looked like copper, almost like the Q drums that are out there. But it was a Gretsch kit that I thought was especially beautiful that you had. But what are some of the more beautiful ones that you've gotten your hands on?
That was a Gretsch. I think it was like a faux copper mist kit that a friend of mine in Nashville, he does a lot of like re-wrap work. He had worked on that kit. That was a really cool kit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've had a bunch of like really nice psychedelic red kits.
Oh, cool.
That's one of my favorite wraps. I think it is for everybody.
Uh-huh.
Like a lot of green and blues. Mm-hmm. Those have been really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a Starlight Sparkle. I've had some of those drums. Those are Gretsch. That's probably my favorite sparkle color.
Cool.
And even like a lot of the MIJ stuff, like the Japanese stuff, I really like.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with that. Yeah.
I kind of compare them to like Gretsch Catalina kits.
Uh-huh.
Because like Catalina kits are, you know, they're made overseas. They're made by Gretsch. And I think like a lot of, you know, like vintage guys, you know, like me or whatever, kind of like stick their nose up at them because they're not like American made drums. But from what I understand, they sound really good. Huh. And that's kind of what like the story was in the 60s and 70s is these Japanese companies are kind of trying to get into the American market, right? We had Ludwig, we had Gretsch, Rogers, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But they would like pick these kind of wild looking wraps, which are really super thin and like crack really easy. Like, frankly, like the drums are really junky in terms of the wood. Like, it's like basically firewood.
Wow.
But like some of the kits are awesome. I just bought a Black Onyx kit.
Mm-hmm.
So like Rogers did a Black Onyx. And it's faded, so it's like kind of like an off-white and black. I have this Tempro kit that I actually just listed.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that as well.
It kind of looks like Ludwig did a Lemon Strata,
uh-huh,
which is another really nice finish,
right,
that Ludwig did. Kind of the same thing as them, like yellow and black bands, but it's like half the price.
Right.
So a lot of that Japanese stuff I really dig. And then, like, you know, I really like drums that are beat up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Got a fella come in the other day, and he's like, yeah, I have this old Slingerland kit. You know, it's pretty messy. And I'm like, he's like, describe it. I'm like, well, did somebody take the wrap off? He's like, no, it's just the original mahogany, but it's like all like chipped up and worn. I'm like, that sounds awesome.
There's another kit that I saw up there that I wasn't familiar with, the Stewart kits that had really cool wraps. What's the story with those? I wasn't familiar with that brand of drums.
Yeah, that's the Japanese brand.
Gotcha.
So there's a few factories in Japan that would put out drums. There was the Hoshino factory, which I think eventually turned into Tama.
Uh-huh.
I have a book on it, which I haven't opened yet. And then I think the factory eventually became Pearl.
Gotcha, okay.
I've seen maybe 30 different names of the drums, the tags they put on the drums or the badges.
Oh, really?
And they're called stencils because, like, pretty much, you know, there's a few different shell designs, like a really thin Luan shell with reinforcement rings, which is the common one.
Right.
There's a thicker Luan shell and then maybe, like, a couple other ones, like a 6 and 6 shell. But they put all these drums with kind of, like, the same design with different names. So there's, like, Stewart, you know, Pearl was this, I guess you could call a stencil brand back in the time.
Mm-hmm.
Tempro, obviously, you just asked about the Tempro kit. That was
right.
Another one.
Yeah.
Mercury, Kingston.
Huh.
But, you know, there's a ton of them.
Interesting.
Yeah, but in reality, they're kind of like the same drums. That's why I guess somebody along the line started naming them stencils because, like, somebody just cut them out with a stencil.
Yeah, right? That is super cool. Yeah. You mentioned a couple of interesting stories attached to drums, but is there any particular crazy story associated with a kit or a particular drum that's come through the door where, because I mean, you got to figure some of these kits that have been around for as long as they have, hopefully the owner knows some of the history on them, but you would imagine some of these kits have seen some wild shit in over, you know, all these years.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I have any stories. I mean, frankly, like based on like what some of these drums look like, I kind of don't want to know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, right,
you come in and there's like a ton of water damage or beer stains, or like I was just working on this WFL kit in Black Diamond Pearl, and I didn't even notice when I bought the kit, but like under one of the leg mounts there's like 3 or 4 big like holes, which it looks like somebody like took like a cigarette and like put it out on the wrap.
Oh man.
That's kind of cool, I guess. Like, right. I would never do that to a drum.
Yeah.
But There's been a couple of kits that people have told me that have been like owned by famous drummers, and I don't know. Maybe I don't really know if like people care about that anymore, though.
Yeah, right.
I feel like the collector thing is kind of on its way out, and I don't know why. If it's because like, you know, people who are my age or younger, maybe a little older, just don't have the money or they don't care. But you know, I don't know. Like, I'd have a hard time spending like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on a kit or a drum that was owned by somebody famous.
Yeah, right. Just because. Yeah.
Maybe that's just me.
Oh no, I hear you, man. Absolutely, they're expensive enough. You know, like I totally get that.
Well, like I mean, I'm trying to think like what that Ringo Jazz Fest sold for. It had to have been like $3 million. It was like it was an obscene amount of money. You know, obviously somebody who's rich is going to buy that. But uh-huh. I don't know. Like, what do you do with that? Like, I've always kind of been like, if I'm not playing something and it's just sitting there, and if it's something that doesn't have sentimental value, like I have a few drums that were given to me or owned by people that like I really look up to or respect, or you know, I have a few of those things, but I've never been much of like, well, I'm going to collect this color or this brand, or I need to have this or that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about like what I can use.
Right.
And not that, you know, people who collect or do that type of thing are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm saying that at all, but
yeah,
it's never kind of been my thing.
Right. Of the drums that have come through, and it sounds like you've got no shortage of vintage drums. I know people in particular love the 3-ply drums from the 60s with reinforcement rings and stuff like that. Is there any particular era of drums that from hearing what they sound like, you feel like it was kind of a golden era?
Oh, man. I mean, honestly, like anything Camco is
really
hands down my favorite. Yeah.
Really?
And, oh, yeah. Have you played one of those kits?
No.
Oh, goodness. And, you know, honestly, like I do this thing on my Instagram. What I'll do is like I'll post, like set my phone up and like I'll play a drum kit.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I'll take the audio and just put the audio on my feed, like on my story, and like say, well, guess what brand this is or what sizes they are.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of like a thing, like an exercise where like, because you think like, oh, well, I love 3-ply drums, or I like, you know, Rogers Cleveland shells or this or that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like the idea is to kind of get you out of your preconceived notions of what you like.
Sure.
But for me, like, man, there's never been any doubt on any Camco kit that I've ever played that, like, man, this is like a special drum.
Really?
Yeah, they're just great, man. I mean, they tune up, they tune down. Like they're a little undersized, so you know, you don't have any issues with like head spinning, or excuse me, head, like sometimes you get an old drum and it's maybe gone out of round over the course of time. Like I have this green kit and I got it and it has all original heads on it, like completely original hardware, but you have to like jam like a regular ambassador on it. And there's like no reason for that. But,
right.
You know, Camco, I've never had any issues with that.
Hmm.
I don't know. It's just, something about those drums that are special in my book.
I'm not really even familiar with the story behind Camco drums. Well, like, where were they made, and was there a particular era when they were made?
So, from what I understand, the company started. It was called George Way in the 50s.
Gotcha.
And that was like, you know, George Way drums.
Yep.
was the thing. And it's weird because like those, in my experience, those don't seem to be as desirable as Camco. And then, so it started as George Way, and then at some point they changed their name to Camco, and they were made in Oakland, Illinois.
Hmm.
And that was in the 60s. And then they moved to Chanute, Kansas, and then they moved out to L.A.
Uh-huh.
And then a company called DW bought that company called Camco. And so Camco eventually became known as DW, and it kind of inspired what DW is now. So, like, those turret lugs you see on a DW are the same ones on Camco.
Gotcha. Right on. Yeah, I'll have to look more into those kits, especially knowing a little bit more of the history on them now and kind of look into just tonally what they sound like, because it sounds really interesting, man. It's funny because I know a little bit about vintage drums. I have a few of them myself, but I just wasn't familiar with that. So I'll definitely have to keep my eyes open for them now that I know about it.
I'm going to ask you what kits are like, what kind of drums do you have? You said you had some vintage stuff.
Yeah, I've got some. I have that clear Vistalite kit. It's the 2212, 1316 standard, you know, from those 70s kits.
Mm-hmm.
I have like an 80s, I want to say, Yamaha 24x14 bass drum that I rewrapped to match some modern. It's the Pearl Masters MCX, I want to say, those maple kits that they put out, in particular, the ones that they put out maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago even. And then, so those, the wrap matches that. I have a Sonar Force Custom Jazz Kit, which is the 2010, 12, 14, that they put out kind of in the late 90s, early 2000s. I got one of those kits and then decided to wrap that. So I wrapped that in a kind of a Bermuda sand wrap. So it looks great. You know, I got the new hoops for it with the inlays to get the stripe on the bass drum rims. And that kit looks killer. That's actually down in Louisiana at my mom's house. It never really gets played unless I'm in town. But it was a hell of a project to rewrap all those drums and take everything and then reassemble them. So I've actually gotten some experience wrapping drums, but it is time consuming doing that shit.
So you did all that yourself?
Yeah.
God bless you. I've never had any interest in like rewrapping stuff. Not because I think it's dumb, like not that at all. Just like it seems like so much work.
It is. I underestimated it. I mean, just doing that bass drum, because I had to get the original wrap off. So I had a friend help me with that. Getting the original wrap off was a complete pain in the ass. And then you have to get all the original adhesive off, and then kind of sand it down and clean it, and then make sure, because of the dimensions of the drum, you know, they don't make wraps, I believe, bigger than 16 inches in diameter. So anything beyond that, you're actually overlaying, and it's two separate pieces of wrap, you know. So you've got to line all that up and then get the edges down and then reassemble it. It is wildly time-consuming.
Yeah, I mean, I get enough stuff in that, like, has been wrapped, and, you know, you could tell the guys that have, like, kind of just done it on like a whim, and then, you know, the guys like took the effort to do it, but I just never had that in me. So good for you, man. That's great.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture of that kit. And then, of course, just snare wise I think I'm like, I've got about 9 snares. I went through a snare selling phase for a while there, and then of course, after selling all those, was like, I got an itch to buy more brass snares. So I got like two different, I kind of like some of the Pearl, older Pearl brass snares that they have. They've got a couple of them that's like black nickel over brass. It's not seamless like a Black Beauty, but it is kind of like a poor man's Black Beauty. And I've got those. That's the Sensitone Elite series, I believe, that they did. And then I've got one of the 90s brass free floaters, and then a full brass one. And then I got the Gene Krupa, you know, I believe Radio King, which is chrome over brass. And then two Supraphonics 5x14s from 76, because I was born in 76. And the first one that I got, I was like, this drum rules. I might as well get another one to see if it sounds any different, which was kind of excessive, but whatever. and then I got, you know, an Acrolite, and as well as an old Premier drum. And I got the, it's just a steel, I believe. I don't think it's aluminum. I think it's a steel Premier shell. And then I got the original, like, kind of old school Premier die cast hoops, which are really interesting.
Oh, true. And, yeah.
And put those on it. So that's a pretty cool drum. That snare is actually down with the jazz kit I was telling you about down in Louisiana. So that's kind of just the kit I get to rock out on at my mom's house when I go back and visit them. But yeah, it's a little crazy, because I mean, between all the cymbals that I have and the two drum sets and 9 snares, thankfully the move out to Utah here, we have room. We bought a house, so I'm gonna have a basement finally to where I can set up hopefully acoustic drums and be able to play them without driving neighbors crazy. So that should be awesome.
That's awesome. I have yeah, I have man. 0 drums at my house, so I'm kind of jealous.
I hear you, man. Speaking of kits, you asked me what kits I presently have. I don't know if you mentioned or not, like, what kit or kits presently you own.
You know, if I'm going to be 100% honest, right now I personally own 0 drum kits.
Amazing.
Well, no, it kind of sucks, man. I mean, I haven't gigged or, like, even played with, like, my band since March.
Wow.
I think we had like a gig. We had a gig booked like the week after, or like the Saturday that like the like announced it started to like quarantine everybody.
Yeah.
And at that time, like I was playing a Q kit. Are you familiar with Q drums?
Absolutely. I've interviewed Jeremy Berman of Q drums. Yeah, those drums are cool, amazing. Man. Those drums are awesome.
He's a great guy. He knows. You think like you know about drums until like you talk to him.
Yeah.
And then like he's like dropping like all this like knowledge and this terminology, and I'm like, cool. Like I know that this has re-rings in it, you know. But right. I've been like a huge fan of his drums for like the last probably 5 or 6 years.
Absolutely.
So I had a copper kit that I had originally, and then I sold that and ordered something a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm. You know, because my band, when we play like really small bars and clubs.
Right.
So I got a 22x12, 9x13, and 16x16 stainless kit from him, which was super awesome. Sounded great. It was a beautiful kit. And then like the pandemic hit, and like I'm like, I don't, and it was like starting to drag on, and like it wasn't looking good. So like this was probably like May, and like they're talking about like we would have to quarantine till like the end of summer, and then
right,
you know, I started like reading articles like, well, you know, it might be like even longer than that. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? You know, and I was like trying to build up my business and trying to invest in new inventory. So I sold that. And then I'll probably order another one whenever like gigs happen again. But right now I like just like playing on, I have this Vista Light kit. It's actually the same that you have. It's 22, 12, 13, 16 clear.
Yep.
That I bought. And I don't know. I've always been attracted to Vista Lights just maybe because they were my first kit, but I know for me, I think like they sound really good. There's a lot of people that
know
who hate them.
Uh-huh.
And like, I get it, but like, I like a really like big, dead, open sound.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no port on the bass drum, you know.
Right.
So I've been playing on those. And I'm kind of hoping that no one buys them because, like, maybe I'll just hold on to them. And
there you go. There's your kit.
That'll be one of my kits.
That's awesome, man. Right on. What is going on with 2021? Just trying to feel it out and hope everything lightens up. And I don't know. What's any particular plans for you?
So, and I think I'd mentioned this, but I actually haven't even kind of told anybody, you know, outside of, you know, my friends and people who live around here. Is I was actually hoping to like be open, like full retail hours and whatnot by now.
Yeah.
But our local like government, like our state government, they like closed all the gyms and all the restaurants and all that, which is totally understandable.
Uh-huh.
But like, I think I said this, like, I just can't responsibly be like, hey, like everybody come here and like shop in person now. Like, it's not a good look.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping by like, and I'm not sure when this will air, but my goal is hopefully by January, stuff will kind of like be heading in the right direction where I can open up. I hired an employee, a good friend of mine, who's a drummer, who's going to work and I'll have open hours. And I'm really excited for 2021. There's not really like a quote unquote drum shop here.
Right.
But there's not like, I don't want to say like a true drum shop, but
drum dedicated shop for sure.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing like that here. So I'm kind of excited about, you know, having people just come in and, you know, it's probably annoying to have to email somebody or DM somebody to come check out a drum, which is what people have had to do for the last 5 years.
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really exciting, man. I mean, I don't really know anything about retail. Like, I ordered a bunch of heads and sticks and started carrying like new cymbals and all that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a new adventure, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Shit, man. Well, best of luck. And again, if I get down there or over there, rather, to visit my my wife's family, I'll definitely have to reach out to you and catch up, man.
Oh, that would be great, man. I really appreciate you having me on, man. Thank you.
No doubt. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Chris for rapping. It was definitely cool hearing about some of these lesser-known Japanese brands of drums and just the Camco line and particular eras that he digs, etc. And definitely a cool shop and a cool dude to boot. So check him out if you're in Pittsburgh, or if you're remote, check out the Reverb page and or the Instagram page. We'll catch you on the next one. Crash, bang, boom.